Good evening, one and all. I'm having all sorts of issues. I was just talking to my guest and saying, oh, everything's looking okay, and everything's looking good. And then, of course, nothing works. But hey, what else can we do? You know, it's always like that. It proves it's live, doesn't it? That's the way we do it. Anyway, I am here, and so is my guest. Now, you know, one of the things we always sort of quite often ask a guest when they come on the program is, you know, when did you, you know, were you writing as soon as you got hold of crayon? Well, in the case of my desk, I think she was. And it's not just one thing she writes. You know, we get people who write this genre or this thing or this thing. My guess, she has a dabble in everything, including, and she just told me she was doing this before the show start, playing a harp. Very hard instrument to play, I can tell you, especially on the fingers, let alone everything else. But she's here, and that's the important part, because on the show today, I have the one and only Joan Donaldson. Hi, Joan. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, and thank you for inviting me on. It's really an honor to be talking to
my
you.
My pleasure. The issue is that I played the end bit of music at the start, which confused me totally. But I'm waiting for it to last another 20 seconds, and it finished. That's what fooled me. Anyway, I am here to show you. But as I said about you, you started writing stories about when you were 6 or something, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. As soon as I could hold that pencil. In fact, I was already making up stories in my mind, but until I could write, I couldn't write them down. And so it was just part of my life, all my life. I've never stopped writing stories. So it's just been what I do, and I always told myself stories to make myself fall asleep at night.
Oh, really?
Too,
so. Yeah. So nobody read to you. You told your own stories to yourself. That's a good one.
No, my mother read to me. I mean, my mother read, and of course, as soon as I could, I was reading books.
Right.
But I would make up stories, or sometimes I would like take a book and then make up, put myself in the book.
Ah,
yeah,
okay.
So I was going through the wardrobe with the kids,
yeah.
And then I was in Narnia.
That's funny.
I would do that.
That's funny, because I always say, I mean, we get a lot, obviously, we've been, 14 years, coming up to 1,700 shows. I might even be over that by now. And one of the things I say, because we get a lot, obviously, a lot of not just sort of fiction type books, we get some non-fiction, you know, people write stories about abuse or about illness and stuff like that, and I always think that if you can put that story into a that information into a story, you know, into a fictional book based on stuff like that, then people who read it, they put themselves in the position of the characters and relate to their own life and pick it up a lot more, and that's exactly what you were doing. You were their part of it.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And I agree with you that you want to create that sense of empathy so that the person, there's a universal theme, and they go, oh, yes, I've experienced those emotions. So now I understand and I identify with
this
character.
That's right.
Yes.
Or, you know, this person understands what I've been through. You know, they're right.
Right.
They could be writing about me. You know, that happened to me and stuff like that. And I always think it's a lot better to sort of read something like that to help people than 7 ways to do this, you know, which I struggle with when we have some of those. But it is what it is. Yeah, I said, you know, at the age of 6, you wrote your first poem. And then you sort of even sort of bound your first collection of stories and plays and poems all together yourself. You sort of really, you know, kept on and spread all sorts of different types of things.
And I mean, I look back and I sort of marvel that I had the courage and just the enthusiasm to do that. I still have that booklet. If I go talk to kids, like at a school, I take it with me and show it to them and say, you know, this is what I was doing when I was in fourth grade. I took all my stories and bound them in a little book.
That's
it was all self-motivated, too. Nobody told me to do
anything. Exactly, and that's great. And it's even better that you still got that book, because that's one of the things that I often ask, you know, are these sort of first things you had still around? Because my view is, you know, you get these famous artists, they have their art exhibition, you know, and the people there and everything like that, and you can just imagine the mother of the artist being there and says, oh yeah, but I know these are wonderful paintings, but look what they did when they were 6. And it's the, you know, the person standing next to the house with the purple hair that's bigger in the house. And it's like that with this books, the fact that you've got that, and I think it's great that you actually take it to schools and show the kids that they can do it. Because I mean, a lot of, how, I don't know about you, I mean, how many times do people say, well, you know, I've got a story, how do I start writing it? You know, how do I get, well, I mean, people keep blogs, people not so much diaries these days, but people do blogs, or people, you know, do even Twitter. You know, it's people do that sort of thing, and that's the start of it. And you've just got to realize that you're actually partly doing it, and just expand on it, I think.
That's right. Yeah. And then people do keep journals. I don't really see them as diaries like they used to have in the Victorian days, but they are journaling their thoughts. If they go on a trip, you know, then they keep a record of it. And again, those are little snippets that you might be able to insert into an essay or into a longer story.
People, they always say, you know, write about what you know. And you do. I mean, people say, well, you know, how much you've used in your book? Well, I wrote it. Of course, there's stuff that's me in my book. How can there not be? It's your it's your memories and your imagination.
That's right. And Jane Yolen has a good point there. She goes, I've never murdered anybody, so I can't write what I know in that sense. But she goes, I can understand anger, you know, and that's what I mine into is what makes you angry and how do you express that?
It's amazing. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I just think that they have people, when you say write what you know, that's correct. You're going to be able to write out of your emotions and out of your experiences. But it may not be, like I said, you're not going to murder anybody in yourself, but you can know what it's like to be that angry.
Exactly, with the anger in it. But it's amazing how it works. I remember I had a lady wrote a book about, I can't remember the title of it, but she wrote a book about a young girl from America who ended up inherited a bar in a little Irish village. In the sort of south of Ireland sort of thing, and she'd never been to Ireland in her life, and she was looking through the stuff and looking through the map, and she saw a name of a town. She thought, oh, that's going to be a good one. I'll base my story on that, I don't know, 4 or 5 years later, you know, the book had come out and was doing pretty well and everything. She actually made a trip to the village, and she knew. And she'd put it in her story that if you went down this road, the church would be there and there's something would be there. And if you did this, it would lead you to the hill and stuff like that. She'd never been there in her life. And yet for whatever reason, whatever had come to her, whatever muse, she knew this place. And she'd written it without seeing it, and it was correct. You've got no idea how these things sort of come to you.
That's right. And yet we also live in the marvel of the internet.
Oh, yeah.
I use it so much when I'm researching historical fiction or nonfiction because, you know, you want to check all these details. And therefore, you never know. And today I was looking up camel hair breaks because the book I'm writing has camel hair breaks in it. So why would they use camel hair? You know, what's going on?
Yeah.
And so I just love it that I can look up all these little tiny details and make it as accurate as possible.
Right. I said at the beginning that, you know, apart from the fact I missed that you're an award-winning author, and I forgot about that. I'm sorry about that. But the diversity in what you've done, what is it, 3 picture books, 2 adult novels, collection of essays, YA book, which is won an awards and stuff like that. Lots of different stuff, not just one genre. You sort of mix yourself around.
Well, as I say, the story tells me how to tell it.
Do you find,
you know, because some stories are simple, they're going to, you know, there's more likely going to be a picture book or an essay, but you get into really complex problems and conflicts, and then you're working towards a novel or a collection of essays.
Do you find, I mean, this is something we've always said on this show, that the characters lead you? That, you know, you, no matter how you might even plan a novel, the characters come along and, you know, you go one way and the characters, they go the other way. Minors want major roles. Some even want their own book. You know, it's crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you find as
well? And then sometimes I find characters walk off trains and just introduce themselves.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't planning on that person, you know, but here they are. What? And they take over. So
they do. Oh, they do take over. One of the things we've had I use this a few times on the show now, but we had this lady who'd written historical romance, and she was on like book 2021 or something of this. You know, she'd been working on this, and we talked about the characters and the lead new and stuff like that. And she said mm-hmm. she had a real issue with the book she just brought out. She said she tried to kill the character 5 times. The character wouldn't die. She had to redo the whole thing so that the character didn't die. You know, we have no control over it.
It's true.
As you said, when you did your original first book, you had little essays and stories and stuff like that in it. And obviously now you do your children's book and various other stuff. Is there one genre you particularly enjoy writing?
Well, I would say it's either writing narrative nonfiction or historical fiction because I love doing research. So, it's to me, it's exciting. It's part of the process to be researching little details about this and, maybe just like I'm writing a collection of essays right now about being a caretaker for an older woman who had Parkinson's disease.
Right.
And I did this when I was in college. And so, I'm writing essays about what it's like to take care of an older person, but then looking at details again about Parkinson's to refresh my mind.
Yep.
So, and then just the whole setting being on Lake Michigan. And I majored in geology in
Oh,
college.
right, yeah.
So, yeah. So I'm thinking in terms of wave actions and sand
Right.
and what the chemical re
Right.
composition of sand. Yeah. And to me, it's so exciting to find out all those details. Or, like I said, historical fiction is very much the same, except there I'm usually locating more information about the culture, the place, the time, the
Yeah.
exact time.
Now, my father unfortunately died of Parkinson's and dementia together, but
Not so sorry.
my mother actually not so much now because she's 94 herself, but she used to go, do talks on Parkinson's at the various
Okay.
Parkinson's clubs and stuff. And she used to say little simple things that will help with somebody with Parkinson's. Always make sure that, especially if it's a man, he's got a belt on, so that you can hold, you can direct him and hold him up sort of with the belt. Satin sheets on the bed so that they can turn around and slide out easier. One of those little rotary seats to get in the car so that they can sit on the seat and then turn their legs in and stuff like that. There's lots of little things that people can do that you don't even think of.
No, I mean, I wish I'd known those things when I was taking care of Miss Bardo, but in all honesty, I was a very young college kid
Right,
because
right.
she hired me because she was a chemist and she thought somebody that went to college would enjoy being on Lake Michigan
Right.
taking care of her.
Right.
Yeah,
The
but those are great
oh, I
suggestions.
mean, it is. It's simple things like that. One of the series you do have, and this is your New York Times best-selling front desk series. Did you sort of set out to make that a series?
Well, the only series that I have is actually, and I don't think it's done anything with the New York Times,
No.
is the
This, do you know
Cumberland.
what? It's an advert on top of your page. That's what it
Well,
is.
I had the Cumberland Mountain
That's the
series,
one
and
I
that was,
was thinking of, right? Yeah,
yeah,
this is
that's the one
Kelly
that
Yang did this other one.
the first one, won the Friends of American Writers Award, and that's on
That's the
writing.
one, yeah.
And then, yeah, and then I went to it did go to the National Book Festival. That was a pretty incredible experience to see my book at the festival sponsored by the Library of Congress. And I walk on the mall there in Washington, D.C., and go up to this tent for Tennessee, and there's my novel.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
always wonder
exactly.
about that. Not just that. The thing that I dread is when you go to one of these clearance places and you see your books in the clearance pile.
Well, yeah, that's different.
That's a different place. So, I mean, this Vinnie's Mountain, was that your historical one?
Yeah, on Viney's
Stuff.
Mountain.
Yeah.
That was the one
Mine
that went
is,
to the
yeah.
National Book
Right.
Festival.
Now,
Yeah.
do you ever get to the sort of urge to take your characters and make them into a, like a longer series?
That's sort of what I've been doing. There's two books with Viney. The next one, which was also published and won an award, was on Hearts of Mercy. And so that sort of continues Viney's story. But then I thought it's time to talk about her sister. So the book that my agent is shopping around right now is called Aethon Kiss, and that's Viney's sister's story.
Okay, so again, the character from the first wants their own book, and they get it in this case. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and Viney is just sort of there a little bit, but not much, because the story belongs to Lizzie. And then hopefully the next book in the series, it will actually be in modern times, but it will be based on one of the people whose relatives were part of the Rugby settlement. And that, so I mean, that one, yeah, I've only written like the first chapter of that one. So,
But
it's in my
at the moment,
mind.
you're shopping round at this second one of this.
The Aethon Kiss,
Yeah.
yes. No, it's actually the third one.
Third
Yeah,
one, okay.
my agent is shopping that one online. Yeah.
And what are you writing right now? Anything different?
Yes, in some ways.
Aha.
I am, it's a novella, and I won the, I don't know if you're really familiar with the Society of Children's Book Writers and
Certainly am,
Illustrators.
certainly am. Yep.
Okay. Well, it was the Michigan group. They offered a mentorship with a young African American writer named Kelly Baptist, who won the Young New Voices Award several years ago. And so I won the mentorship with Kelly for my young adult novel, which is based on a true story, but of course I'm taking it much deeper and further. Actually, I wrote it as a short story and it won an award, so I thought, well, I'd like to make it into a longer piece. And it's about a forbidden friendship between a white sharecropper's son and an African American sharecropper's son in 1957. And like I said, it's actually my brother's brother-in-law's story because he grew up as a sharecropper and he was the one that was friends with Richard, who taught him how to sing, especially to sing hymns. So the story is, of course, there's a lot of internal tension because Billy knows that his father would never approve of his relationship with Richard, which is, they just want to be friends. They want to go fishing together. They do a lot of that kind of stuff. And, but the mothers realized that the sons were friends. And they would turn their backs like when the boys went out the door. Like, I didn't see that. I don't know where you go, you know? And so for me, it's really exciting to be working with Kelly because she can clue me into things about the culture that I might miss.
Yes, makes
And
sense, yeah.
then, yeah. And so, she's helping me there, especially. And then also, she suggested to me certain books that I've been reading to see how they handle racial tension at that time period or a little later. So, I've not done this kind of work where you have to be really careful, even though it's all told from the white boy's point of view. And I'm not trying to be somebody else's voice, but I still want to be accurate in what I'm doing.
Oh, that makes a lot of looks a lot of good sense. That I know, you said, bringing that in with family and that, and I know you like bringing sort of family stories that can inspire people. Like, was it The Secret of the Red Shoes? But
Yes.
also, you like when it comes to naming characters, you like to sneak some friends in there.
Well, I love to do that. It's so much fun. I'm careful, but yeah, especially like my first picture book that was illustrated by Tasha Tudor. I was sitting there, I don't know what to call these people, so I just kept putting all my friends in, and they loved it. They thought it was great. So I just had
Did you
fun
use
like
their
that.
actual names, or did you just base them on the people?
No, many of them I use their actual
Oh,
names. I mean,
it's
sometimes it's like Mrs. Carroll,
right.
who's the Irish fiddler Liz Carroll. And Liz thought it was wonderful. She said, I've never been put in a book before.
I think it's funnier, yeah, it funnier in a way when everybody knows that this character's in the book really based on this person, except the person who can't see it's them, because you get.
Well, and even stores, I named the one store in the Real Pretend Dickinson's because that's the name of the hardware store run by friends downtown in Fenville. So to me, it was just ways to include my friends and, to have a nice time doing it. And they all liked it, so it's not like it's a problem. And I made sure that they're very nice characters, so that sounds, I'm not doing anything nasty to them.
Well, I mean, when you're not writing, of course you're working on, you've got organic blueberry farm, haven't you? You and your
That's
husband,
right.
with
We have
goat
we
cheese.
have 40 acres of organic blueberries.
I know. You got 40 acres of organic blueberries.
Yeah, it's really not that much compared to some of the big blueberry farms around
No,
here,
I
but it's
guess
a
so.
lot when it's mostly two people doing organic
Right,
farming.
I bet, I bet. And of course, you got your cheese, your goat cheese, you do.
And we have goats, and so I make a lot of cheese and yogurt, and I raise a huge garden, so I can can and freeze from that. So,
Now, we
yeah.
said earlier on about you playing the harp, the folk harp, but
Right.
you play Scottish fiddle tunes on the harp. I would have thought that would been very hard on the fingers.
Well, two things. I do play both Irish and Scottish music on my harp, but I play, in fact, my harp, I just got a new harp from Scotland. It's just beautiful. But I play the smaller clarsach wire harp.
Okay, not the big,
You actually, you should play it with your fingernail. You
yes,
know, it has
the
like,
plaque with the
this one
nails,
has
that's right,
29 strings. Yes. Use your nail. That's right. So it would be hard on my fingers if I was using my fingertips all the time.
yeah, that's
But on the wire harp, you
that's
use
what
your fingernail.
I couldn't work out, because I mean, you get some Scottish fiddles and it's quite quick, and
I'm not that quick, but I
no.
try.
Now, see, I people and I do the music shows as well on the weekends. I got two music shows on the weekend
Right.
also, and I had a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, a quiz. I put a quiz in it, and one of the things was, what Beatles song starts off with a harp? And there's a Beatles song where the harp plays in it, just one, and people unfortunately guessed it, but.
I'm going to say, I wouldn't know that. I could tell you a lot about Scottish and Irish music.
I know, but there is. It's she's leaving. She's leaving home. She's leaving. It starts off with a.
Oh, yes.
What's the thing where you run the? There's a term for it, isn't
The
it?
glissando?
Yeah, where you do
Yes.
the waves sort of thing. Yeah, and it
Yeah,
starts
you
up with
glissando.
yeah. I know a little bit. I'm dangerous because I know a little bit, but music-wise, I'm that sort of thing like that. Okay, so we've gone through the various bits and pieces and the sort of genre stuff and everything. Do you see yourself going back and perhaps doing some more, picture books, or you're now sort of developing into the more of the written stuff?
No, actually, well, I'm going to back up just a second. I also write passages for a testing company that creates like achievement tests for the state of South
Oh,
Carolina and the
wow.
state of Michigan. So I'm writing passages and I'm gleaning information and ideas. So I'm finishing up a picture book. I never knew this. There was a man out in Denver about 1900 who his name is Oliver Fitchley, and he invented a electric car that could go 100 miles on a single charge.
Wow.
This is in 1904.
Crikey.
And so he created this car, and people were like, oh, it's not practical, it's not practical. Well, he wanted to prove it was practical. And so he took it to, let's see, Lincoln, Nebraska, and then he drove it to New York City Times Square in 28 days. So that story, because it's buried, nobody seems to know anything about
I
it.
love
And
finding those stories like that. This is
I
one of
know
the things I love
it
about
was
this
so
show.
exciting.
Yeah.
So I'm finishing up just now a picture book about him because I think when I went and looked, all I could find was picture books on modern electric cars, and that's good. But maybe people should know that 100 miles on a single charge in
Yeah.
1904, that's
Amazing.
incredible.
Amazing.
It is.
I mean, you think the batteries in those days, how big they were, and one charge of that's a huge amount. That's it.
He invented his own battery. He was a chemist, and so
Okay.
he before he came along, most batteries could not be recharged.
Right.
You went and bought a new battery.
Yep.
So he learned how to recharge batteries, and it was like 500 pounds of batteries in this car. It was a huge
Yeah, must
cell
be,
block
yeah.
of battery.
But even so, that's amazing to in those days to be able to drive and like that. People just wouldn't believe it.
No, in fact, even when I mean, because I've lived off the grid for many years, we make our own electricity from mostly solar at this point. But, for years we kept thinking about getting an electric car, but usually they only went 100 miles,
Yeah.
which is enough. But, we said, that might not be enough to like drive to Grand Rapids and back.
Yep,
So,
no.
but this guy was doing it back then, and that's what's so amazing. And it just sort of got buried, is what it did, because gasoline engines came along that were much more, inexpensive.
Yeah.
Henry Ford's car cost one fifth of what Fitchell's car
Yeah.
cost. So that's what happened. Ford took over.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. I love that sort of thing. It's like, I know you're into quilting. I remember I now know about the quilts at G's Bend, for instance, and stuff like that.
Oh,
Oh,
they're wonderful.
yeah. I mean, there's a whole stuff like that, Three River Floods, and all these books that I have people on the show, and I find it great to learn these little snippets of things. I
Sure.
infuriate my wife by having these little sort of gems that I come out with at parties and stuff. Did you
I was telling people at a little dinner gathering the other night. Well, let's see, asphalt was invented in 650 BC by the Babylonians, and they just threw it to me. I've been researching the road system in America because that was one of the problems for this car.
Right.
There were no connecting roads.
Yeah.
You know, he was going down these muddy roads. He one evening washed off 75 pounds of mud.
Well, you look at the mate a lot. Not a lot, but some of the major roads in England are still the Roman roads. The Roman roads are still there, you know, and here we are, you know, 1,000, 2,000 years later, almost, sort of thing. It's amazing when you think about that sort of stuff. But yes, the Babylonians, and then, of course, when macadam came along and the stones had to fit into your mouth or through a ring, sort of thing, and yeah, all those roads, these things. And that's why you have macadamization named after, you know, the tarmac, because that was named after Thomas, I think it was Macadam. I think he was Scottish, if I remember right.
Okay.
But yeah. Anyway, we're chatting away about this sort of thing. It's great to know all about the different books and how you're doing it and everything. But time is beating us. So what I'm going to do now is hand this show over to you, Joan, so you can tell everybody where people can find out more about you and, of course, all your books and everything. So over to you.
Okay, well, thank you. I do have a website. It's www.joandonaldson.com, and it lists most of my books. And, of course, you can always buy them at, like, Barnes & Nobles and Amazon, or order them through your local independent store. And then the other place I direct people is actually to our farm website, because that's where I post a newsletter, usually once a month, sometimes twice a month. And that is, again, you know, the HTTP, all that stuff. It's PleasantHillBlueberryFarm.com.
Okay, PleasantHillBlueberryFarm, okay.
Farm.com. And yeah, and that's where, like, you can sign up for the newsletter. And I also put information about my books in there. I call it Berries and Books.
Fair enough. What are you?
Berries and Books.
Why not?
Why not? I mean, so, you know, people can order through our farm, actually, too. I put some of my books on our farm store.
Right.
Especially my one book, Wedded to the Land, because lots of people like to read that. And then they learn more about our farm and all that we do here, and from all the different essays
That's
in there.
Right. Well,
so, I mean, all the normal resources, but those are the two sites. And then, of course, I'm on Facebook, too.
Okay. Well, Joan, thank you so much for being a guest. It's been really great chatting to you. Really enjoyed it. Thank you very much, and good success with the shopping of the books and the other books that are coming out. So, yeah, may your success continue.
Okay, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Joan Donaldson. And as she said, you can find her at joandonaldson.com and that other one with the blueberries for farm one. You know, remember that other one. Anyway, that's it. I'll be back with a fresh guest tomorrow. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say.